Hi, this is Veronica Taylor. I play Ash on Pokemon, and you're listening to This Week in Geek.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So damn nerdy. I'll take you to the comic shop. I'll show you all the bills I drop.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Beyond the Gauntlet, and it's all new Gauntlet Now form. You're going to get what I'm talking about in just a minute. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, coming to you from the future at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. I am joined with the madman behind this whole thing.
I am Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet, and I'm now foil.
I am Jamie, make mine Marvel Marching Mary Society McBurney.
Wow, that was really impressive.
And I'm Jeff, relaunched DeHaan.
And today, guys, in the show, we are going to be talking about, well, we took our pot shots at DC, and now it's time to take a look at Marvel. What the hell is up with Marvel? Gentlemen, where do we start with this one?
Chris, give us a breakdown.
All right, well, okay, so not too long ago, we did the episode where we basically had at DC, and we talked about the bad things that we thought DC were doing marketing-wise and in their stories and art, and I felt it was only fair that we had at Marvel, and since they're setting themselves up so nicely for it with what's going starting in January with the all-new Marvel Now, which is rebooting everything back to issue one again, even though they just did this like a year ago.
Which is why it's the all-new Marvel Now, because about a year ago, they did Marvel Now.
Exactly. So I gotta do a little bit of a head tilt and the to that because of that. But before we get into that too much, let's go back to the trivia man, Captain Birdie.
Indeed, we had a couple of trivia questions that we were looking at, and this is again some more classics from 1993, mm-hmm. May 1993, featuring Chapel in all his muscly J. Lee glory. The question for folks at home was, which character has never been a member of the Teen Titans? Mal, Bumblebee, Kid Eternity, or Aqua Girl? And folks, what do you think?
I went with Aqua Girl myself.
Aqua Girl?
I think it was Aqua Girl.
I'll say Mal.
It was Kid Eternity, which was a Neil Gaiman Vertigo book. It was a miniseries that he put out. It was a 3-issue miniseries. So kudos to you if you got that. Any Gaiman fans out there?
So because all of us got it wrong?
Yeah. All right, so that's okay. We got a few to get you guys warmed up, to get your brains going, and we're going to end with a Marvel one to get us sort of zoomed into it and try to figure out what the heck's going on.
Wonderful.
All right, we're going to start really easy. What city is Star Trek's Starfleet headquartered?
Oh my God, really?
Come on. What? Mike?
It's San Francisco.
It's San Francisco. Yeah.
It's the San Francisco treat.
Geneva, Switzerland. That would have been.
Cleveland.
Big Barda? Wife of which superhero?
Oh, gee. I don't know. Could it be Scott Free?
Scott Free, Mr. Miracle. Thank you very much. Next one.
Love that you actually used lines from the hymn for your vows. That's your geek cred right there.
I read it.
There's a reason we have him on this show, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't even know who the Super Patriot is, but who rebuilt the Super Patriot? Europon? Cord Industries, Oracle, or Cyber Data?
Well, it's obviously a DC thing.
Let me fill you in on Super Patriot. Super Patriot is a character that was in the Savage Dragon comic book, and he was basically the cyborg looking
Captain America
ripoff with a big ponytail.
Yes.
Now you remember him, don't you?
He had the flag mask.
With the goggles. I believe it was Cord Industries. If memory serves me correctly, guess.
It was in fact Cyber Data.
Cyber Data.
Cord was DC, right? This was before.
That's right.
So Cord was Ted Cord.
Cord was Blue Beetle, Ted Cord.
So they expected us not to know anything about it.
Well, it's okay. I knew who Super Patriot was, though.
That was good. That saved me a little bit of mind.
Half
work.
Points for you there, Chris.
And one more beautiful nepotism question here. What is Bedrock, of course, later named Bad Rock after the Hanna-Barbera company sued them? The Flintstones thing.
Wow.
What was he reading at the end of Youngblood number 0? Now, Youngblood number 0, if you want to sum up the 90s in comics, Youngblood number 0 does it. What is he reading at the end of Youngblood 0? Playboy, Wizard, Mad, or Teen Beat? What are we thinking?
Oh.
Teen Beat.
Keep in mind, this is like hardcore nepotism here. They're
Wizard.
Yeah, they're patting themselves on the back.
This is going with Wizard here because I don't think they would have been wouldn't have been going for the Mad Magazine because that was DC Comics.
That's what I was going to say, they're not going to do that.
They were just patting themselves on the back with that one.
And what's our question for the people at home?
Our question for the people at home is a Marvel-based question. And again, keep in mind this is 1993. When traveling, where does Tony Stark, or did Tony Stark, normally keep his Iron Man armor? In a ring, under his clothes, in his attaché case, or in an extra-dimensional, quote, pocketverse? This is a complicated one. This is, again, 1993, so keep that in mind.
Stay tuned next episode for the exciting answer.
I've got guesses on this one.
Now I'm curious, but we'll get to that, because it is time to get into the meat of Marvel.
Okay, so bringing us back to this whole thing, I have a previews magazine in front of me for January and February, and this is the thing that is driving me up the wall. Now, I understand what Marvel's trying to do here. Marvel is trying to make it easy for new people to get into their comic books. And they do legitimately have a lot of comics starting back at issue number one. Mm-hmm. For example, there's a Miracle Man number one, a Miss Marvel number one, a She-Hulk number one. Now, these are all titles that haven't had their own comic for a while.
There's a new Ghost Rider series coming out.
And he's in a car.
He's actually in the Thunderbolts. Too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he's, yeah.
But the thing that confuses the hell out of me is when you take a series like Avengers AI, which has only had six issues, and they're already going back to number one.
Well, is it number one or is it going? I thought it was 7.1.
This is the really confusing thing.
Because you're both right.
Yeah.
I'm going to read this out of you. Okay. Let's take Captain America number one.
Okay.
What the book is actually going to say on it is Captain America number 16 point now equals Captain America number one, all new Marvel now.
Now here's
how the hell is this Klingon math is this?
How is this going to make it easier for people to get into it? Why don't they just keep the numbering at 16 and do one of their point one issues, which have been working very well?
Here's my question. What's the next one going to be numbered? Is it going to be number two or is it going to be number 17?
17.
So it's not really number one then.
Nope. No. They're just doing this because they know people are idiots and buy number one comics.
What it seems like to me, and what I've been noticing a lot with Marvel's recent output, is that they've gotten away from a lot of the sort of traditional numbering, obviously. But I mean, where it used to be, the final issue of Fantastic Four before it started over with, 589, yes. I want to say? Before they switched it to, like, FF and then the separate series. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. I don't think that we're going to have series get up to, 100, 200, save like Spawn, which is still going.
And a lot of fans have actually opposed that idea of doing more of a season, if you will, where it's like you do a story and it goes that long. And actually, I believe Hellboy's been doing that for a while, where basically if they have a story, it'll get released monthly. But once that story's done, then they don't really say anything until the next story's out, and that next story is number one.
Which makes a lot of sense doing it, but right now they're keeping the numbering going, but also saying it's number one, and it's just very confusing.
From
a comic shop owner perspective.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And from a person who is either collecting or trying to get into it.
And so for me,
because what's going to happen is, and I can guarantee you this is what's going to happen, in February, I'm going to get a bunch of new customers that are going to come in and go, oh, Captain America number one, and they're going to buy it. And then they're going to be like, all right, next month this year, where's issue number two? And then I got to be like, no, it's actually issue number 17.
And then they're going to yell liar at you.
And you know what? It's like you were saying, maybe it's Jamie or Mike, I don't know. One of you said it anyways, is that why didn't they just make it a point one issue? Because isn't that basically what the point one issues were? Whereas an issue
they were a good jump on point for people.
It was a catch up point for the recent happenings. And it was a jump on point, like Chris said, to get people going forward. And then if it's a point one, you don't have to worry about you know, coming in and saying, where's number two? And
so all I got to say when it comes to this sort of thing is, you know, it's going to be confusing for everyone. So I don't know if their marketing department or whoever came up with this was on a trip to Tahiti or something at this time. Which is a magical place. But... who let this pass the board? Because it's dumb.
Yeah, it is. I am totally with you in that it is confusing. For me, where I come to that is because I'm someone who is reading a lot of Marvel books. A couple of them are going to get, you know, the only number one. The two examples that I'm thinking of, one is the Daredevil, which by Wade and Samnee, which is an amazing book, probably one of the best things Marvel's put out.
Is Wade going to be on it again?
He's
going to
be writing it again.
He's going to be continuing.
Yeah.
Okay, because see, I thought for a while there that, I mean, it would make sense that if you took a writer, like what happened with The Incredible Hulk, he worked, like Greg Peck worked on The Incredible Hulk for so long.
Oh, for years.
And then they ended The Incredible Hulk and then restarted again with the new creative team.
And
but they
I understand
did that.
That
they
too.
Did that as a service to Greg Peck saying, hey, you wrote this for so long. We're going to end this because you worked on it for so long. And then the next creative team would take it over.
Yeah, and it
and
was
they
the
could
same.
Take it in a
this
completely
brings
different
me to
direction
my other big gripe with Marvel right now is the consistency in their books is they don't let an artist or a writer stay on the book except for for a few rare things like Dan Slott working on Superior Spider-Man and Mark Waid working on Daredevil. Very few
if
books.
It's a moneymaker.
Yeah. I haven't noticed a lot of the books, and actually I would argue the opposite, that a lot of the books that I'm enjoying right now at Marvel have been really surprisingly standard in the writing. Now, the art is another matter, but I mean, it comes down to, I think, what individuals want from a comic.
Yeah.
And for me, I could care less about the art as long as it's relatively competent. And there have been a couple
doozies.
As long as it shows an element of storytelling, I'm fine with it. As long as the writing is good.
Yeah.
So for me, my favorite Marvel books right now, like X-Men Legacy, has had Cy Spurrier on it from day one, who's been given the 25 issues.
He's one of the few ones.
Christopher Yost on Scarlet Spider and a lot of the
And those books
Spider-Man
are ending,
books.
Though. Legacy's ending, yep. Scarlet yep. Spider's ending.
But the thing is that there are very few Marvel books that have been outright mercy killed. The only one that has gotten a, in my opinion, wholly justified put down is Fearless Defenders, which started off as a relatively interesting female-led super team and then just spun its wheels and got really, really weird. There was issue number 9 was like it was just beautifully terrible. Where they would have these ideas that they wanted to be like feminist and forward thinking, but it would come off as like almost a parody of feminism, where they're like, let's have all the men and all the boyfriends of all the characters sitting in a bar and talking about where the girls are. So, but that book got the mercy kill at 12. But Scarlet Spider, which was a low performer, the same deal with X-Men Legacy, they're getting 25 books to tell their story. And they're doing a relatively good job of wrapping those up.
Yeah.
So I'm happy with a lot of the stuff that I'm reading. I mean, you've got Bendis doing Guardians of the Galaxy, which I've been enjoying. You've got Hickman, who has been outstanding on his Avengers stories. But the thing is about Hickman, is, especially in his comic stuff, is you've got to read everything. Which we can also cover when it comes to looking at Infinity and sort of the
how
to put things
together. Don't get me wrong,
together.
because I don't want to come off as a Marvel hater here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I still enjoy Marvel comics, like, wholeheartedly. And you know what? The issue number ones, like, if an issue number one is warranted, like, for example, they're starting another Punisher number one. They're doing Ms. Marvel number one, She-Hulk number one.
Even the new Fantastic
new
Four.
New Warriors number one. New Warriors hasn't been a comic
new
in a
Warriors
few years.
New Warriors is going to be... something.
I'm hoping it is going to be good. It may turn out to be
Christopher
a
Yost is writing it, and it's got Scarlet Spider in it. So I'm going to Nova too.
And Nova, and you know what? Speedball, which I have to ask. I have to ask you this, Jamie, as a Marvel guy.
Yes,
I have to talk to you about Speedball for a moment.
Now,
here.
which part? The emo part? Because I want to talk to you about the emo part. But you go first.
Okay. What I want to know is, in Civil War, he caused the Stanford incident. Spoiler alert here, and He then became Penance.
That was my favorite, yes.
Where he became all emo and hurt me, hurt me, hurt me.
Yeah.
And it was almost like they aged him till he was like in his mid-20s.
Yes.
And now suddenly he's back to being a 17-year-old kid again. What the hell is up with that?
What they will do is they will – and this is actually – this connects to another thing that I really appreciate in Marvel. They will address that. It will not, I don't think, be addressed particularly well or in a satisfactory way. It will be addressed. There was that one, what was the issue of Spider-Man? Where there was an issue of I think it was a Spider-Man book before the Superior started, where they did this great two-panel throwaway gag explaining why like Mary Jane's arm was broken in one issue and not. And they actually put in the book, Peter Parker and Tony Stark. Tony was like, yeah, I totally put a magic cast on her that fixed it up in no time. And then the next panel is him and Peter Parker looking out at the audience just like a what? Come on. So I think that's what they will explain it. But I would much rather have to deal with the occasional little bit of hiccups. Because I get a legacy character and I get a legacy of storyline. I feel that sense of progression and the stuff that they're coming up. But so that's
like
sort
I said,
of my...
In general, okay, you got all these characters that are being passed around from writer to writer. And it is possible that when one writer reads another writer's work to figure out where the hell the other writer was going with it, he may miss a thing or two. Now, I'm fine with that.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
You know what? In general, Marvel's writing has been very solid lately. Except for some again marketing decisions, for example, Infinity.
Okay,
we talked.
Here we go.
Okay, we talked before about events and continuity.
Yep.
Okay, and one of the things we said was a very bad idea for Event to do was to have their main book not actually be able to stand on its own.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I have a customer come in and go, hey, I want to read Infinity and I want to know what's going on in this event. I don't want to have to go, well, not only do you have to buy Infinity, you've got to buy half the other Marvel Universe with it.
What I think Infinity was doing, and I think that they were playing their cards relatively well in the sense that I don't think Infinity was ever going to be something that people would pick up. They were hyping it up. I think that people would pick it up, but like I know Jeff, you picked up a couple issues and just were like, bah, right?
Yeah, well, here was the thing with me. Here was my experience with Infinity was episode, I had said that I was a sucker for events.
Yep.
So I found out Infinity was coming up and they were kind of hyping it. And I'm like, I don't know a lot about the cosmic stuff. So I bought issue number one of Infinity.
Yeah.
And it was kind of confusing. And I thought, oh, there was a couple panels at the beginning that I'm like, oh, well, maybe this is kind of like a flash forward for a second and then they'll retell the story. And then I got issue number two. And apparently a whole bunch of stuff happened in between issue number one and issue number two of Infinity. And that was when I looked just inside the cover.
At the map. There's the map. I think it's on the back of the book.
Yes.
Where they actually have a map. Yeah, showing you.
They have a little icon. Like they have squares for Avengers. They have the circles for the six-issue Infinity series, and they have diamonds for New Avengers, and they have the numbers that correspond, and the order that you're supposed to read them.
So,
did they say any of this leading up to it?
Well, and this is where I think their marketing choices were poor with the event again, and I'm talking about how they're presenting these things.
Yep.
You know, it's not the fact that they're rebooting things at number one; it's the confusing thing they're doing. Right.
Right.
Same idea here. What they could have done is, and they did this with X-Men Battle of the Atom,
which is what I wound up picking up when I ditched Infinity.
Yeah.
Because Battle of the Atom was only three issues behind, so I scooped up the three issues. Chris had them here, and it was wholly better. Which it crossed over into. It had
five X-Men titles.
Yeah, five X-Men titles for 2 months. Or no, it was four X-Men titles
and
for 2 months.
And
it had bookended by two. So it was 10 issues total. So, and they're spanning all different numbers. So because you had like, you know.
It had Battle for the Atom, one-shot issue one.
Right.
And then it went into X-Men, the Uncanny X-Men, and Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, each cover said chapter one, chapter two. So they know how to do it. Why wouldn't they do that with Infinity?
So this is what I found, and this is the reason why like the Hickman books, I think that if people read the collected Infinity, I think it will be fine.
Well, of course, because the collected entity will have everything.
But if you read the people who read the individual issues more often than not are going to be the obsessives like me who have read every issue of Avengers.
Not necessarily.
I find
I'm saying from a comic shop owner perspective. I had 20 people. Okay, because I only had 5 issues left. Sorry, actually 25 people.
Yep.
Out of the 30 issues of Infinity I ordered a month.
Yep.
The first 3 issues I sold of Infinity, I sold 25 copies out of the 30.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
That dropped after issue 3 to 10 people. And why did that drop to 10 people? Because they said the book made no friggin' sense. They would have been willing to try this event and give it a shot.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the fact that if you picked up Infinity 1 and then read Infinity number 2, you missed an entire chapter that happened
Why couldn't they have just said it was like going to be a maxi series and say it'll be like a big 12-part event, but it'll be spanning into these and just do like they did with Battle of the Atom, chapter 1.
But they didn't do that. They said it's Infinity, it's a whole new event.
And you know what? If it's as good a story as Jamie says, I might be willing to collected edition.
It's
because
so
then I'll
good.
Actually know what's going
and
on.
And I'm not marking the story because the writing of the story was fantastic if you could read it in the correct order.
Because I didn't want to get the tie-ins.
This is a pure example of Fox airing Firefly all messed up. Okay? Because everybody's like, all right, here's episode 1, episode 2, episode 12, episode 8, episode, you know, and then it was just,
yeah.
It reminded me of that because of the fact that if somebody wanted to get in here, what they should have done was they should have done what like DC is doing with Forever Evil right now. They have ended Justice League temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now just Forever Evil coming out. What they should have done was they should have ended the Avengers, and they should have ended the New Avengers, and they should have just had the 12-part or 16-part or however many parts Infinity ended up being, which...
Doesn't that then tie back into what you were saying about confusing numbering? So...
Well, no, then they would read it in the correct order. But now, it's like, okay, I got to buy Infinity number 1,
16.
And then I got to buy Avengers number 18, and then I got to buy a New Avengers number 9, then I got to buy Infinity number 2. How is that not more confusing than just knocking the book into a chronological order?
Speaking as a nerd who loves organizing his comic book collection, having a map that I had to follow for the story... I mean, and again, it's not. I'm only looking at it from my perspective. Having a map to follow through the story was great.
Okay,
I enjoyed I'm not all actually of the.
But why would you need the map if they just didn't put it all in one big thing?
I'm not even completely knocking the map. It's that if you weren't reading Avengers or New Avengers, you wouldn't know that you even needed to buy them. That is the problem
yes.
that
yeah,
I had.
That's the thing.
There was nothing in the ads for Infinity leading up to it that said crossing over with Avengers and New Avengers.
I want to be completely clear, on this. The event itself was fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
I read this event,
yep.
and I read it in the correct order, and it was amazingly written and amazingly drawn. The artist teams they had on this. And the writing was fantastic, and it was a great interstellar story of everything going on. But to a reader who is coming into Marvel for the first time, which is what Marvel is trying to focus on right now, is acquiring new readers that have never read their comics before, this was, for lack of a better term, a clusterfuck. Pardon my French. There's my one word for the day.
Awesome. We're now PG-13.
Yeah. I don't necessarily know that they were trying to get... I mean, they obviously were advertising it. I don't necessarily know if there was... I think that the marketing people looked at it and were like, this should be something we market to people as a big event that is going to get new readers. But I think anyone who was sending it through should know that it wasn't going to get any...
Now,
new readers
and
off
the
of that.
And the other because thing, it is, too, yeah. it was it, when you take Infinity, it was the conversions of 4 story arcs into one giant story arc.
Yeah.
Because you had what was going on with the Builders and the Avengers. You had what was going on with the collision of the universes and the new Avengers.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you had what was going on with the Inhumans, and then you had Thanos coming back.
Well, yes. You know what, though? Then have a prelude to Infinity book start off that it's basically like a point one of the event.
They did, actually. They put out a trade paperback.
Yes, a trade paperback.
They put it a trade. No, I'm just talking. That's a little much than just a point one issue.
Again,
it's an entire
this is what the hell's going on with
I
Marvel.
Think, I think the thing is, Hickman's writing is always very involved.
And I'm not disrespecting the writing at all.
Hickman's a very talented writer. I'm just saying that it doesn't lend itself for
to being summed up in an event.
Like his storytelling is very decompressed. There's, you know, you could read a lot of a couple issues of New Avengers in order and just be like, nothing's happening. They're just talking. But once you sort of put the pieces together, then it clicks. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it was the proper choice to be marketed as something that would be something that people could just pick up and read. They did do that, and that I think is a mistake. And now, it goes with humanity.
Here's the other thing, though. They have been. Marvel has been doing this for a while, and again, I don't blame the people involved as far as the artists and the writers. Mm-hmm. Marvel again is the one with the grand storyboard, and I don't know if this is Disney getting involved and mucking about in Marvel or not. But
yeah.
It seems that the last couple big events they've done, which they've marketed the hell out of, have only been setting the next event up.
Yeah.
Because you got really at the end of Infinity, all it was a setup for Inhumanity. Now is Inhumanity just going to be a setup for whatever the
sad thing is? Inhumanity even has the same font as Infinity for the title.
I do. Ironically, love that that's where that went. That I was actually personally really happy when the last Infinity book came out, and I could stop having to worry about all the pieces coming together, and I could just read my books again. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be touching Inhumanity with a 10-foot stick because I don't care about the Inhumans.
You should. The first issue was fantastic.
I don't like the Inhumans. I feel what they're trying to do is they're trying to make them right now into, which is really fun, they're trying to make them into mutants that they can use in the movies. So
no, because the angle that they're going with the book is I'll kind of slight spoiler alert.
Yeah.
The entire first issue is basically Karnak, who, if anybody knows the Inhumans, his ability is to find the weakness in anything, kind of like we are right now with Marvel.
Also, he's got a hilarious helmet and a wicked stash. That's
exactly.
The other thing you need to
know. And the entire issue is him basically giving you the history of the Inhumans and basically saying to you that everything you knew about us is wrong. Okay.
And it's written by Matt Fraction, who I love.
And it was... do yourself the justice, Jamie. Check out at least the first issue.
Yeah.
They've already done the Inhumanity is not going to be so much as a 1, 2, 3, 4 thing because it's going to break into a series of one-shots after this.
Yeah.
The Inhumans Medusa, the Inhumans Black Bolt, the Inhumans Karnak. All these issues are going to come out, and they're going to come out like once a month, and you just pick up whichever one came out that month.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not going to be hard to follow like Infinity was.
Yeah, and for me, though, like a lot of it ties back to what I do appreciate about what Marvel's doing is they're doing a lot of really interesting reboots. I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of the numbering is messed up. But if you look at the stuff that's coming out between January and March of next year, there's some really cool creative bits coming out. There's a new She-Hulk series finally. Mm-hmm.
Thank God, because I really enjoyed the last one, and that's something that I was going to get into soon, too, early cancellations. Stuff that, I mean, I'll admit, She-Hulk's kind of a B-level character. As popular as she is to some, she's never really been taken seriously. She was almost as bad as Deadpool for breaking the fourth wall, you know?
Well, I'm really excited because they're putting out a collection of the Dan Slott She-Hulk soon. So.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, yeah, so here's the thing when it all boils down to it, too, is, okay, yeah, they have some confusing marketing strategies that even the fans and the people getting into it stand back and go, I can't follow this half the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but however, I want to touch on some things that Marvel's doing right as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, because this isn't just an episode where we're complaining. Well, I mean, when I say what the hell's up with Marvel, I want to give them the high five.
Yeah, there's some good stuff too, right?
That is what we kind of did with the DC one. And a friend of mine who listens did have a slight complaint that it was a lot of negativity. And I feel the problem because, as we said in that episode, Chris and I are also big DC fans. We didn't really get the opportunity to say what we liked because other people sitting at the table who shall remain Jamie.
Hey, I love All-Star Western is awesome. Astro City is awesome. The Wake is pretty good, although the end of the last issue was weird.
Either way, I'm just saying that I agree with Chris that, yeah, we should at least voice
the only other negative thing that I'm going to touch on with Marvel is they've got some artists floating around in Marvel right now. I'm not going to mention who they are because I think it'll be unfair to these artists to be named.
Yeah.
But for a company owned by Disney, I think bad art or art that doesn't fit a comic book style is unacceptable.
I find that most of the time, because I'm more writer-focused when I read books, that I can put a lot of art I don't really care for the most part. But there have been a couple times, especially if the script is slightly weak, then I'm really aware.
Well, again, I would like to stress to Marvel, if they're listening to our show, and I hope they are, to get the customer feedback sort of thing.
Send me free Infinity
If you
stuff.
Have a noir book, put a noir artist on it. If you have a happy-go-lucky book, put a happy-go-lucky artist on it. If you have a serious spy thriller book, have an artist that fits it. Do not put the artist that looks like he should be drawing Deadpool on Daredevil. Do not have an artist that looks like he should be doing the spy thriller drawing like Spider-Man, you know?
The worst,
now,
yeah.
Now, I will say this, okay? Yep. Some of the ones I think the art and the things fit. Mark Waid.
Yeah, and Chris Amney.
And Chris Amney fit.
Yes.
Their art is brilliant.
That's perfect.
It meshes with the writing perfectly.
Yep.
Okay, Dan Slott with his...
Superior?
With Superior.
Yeah.
Forgive me for...
Humberto Ramos?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Their art fits together because Spider-Man, first of all, is a kind of... freaky, happy-go-lucky character, even in the Doc Ock version of him.
I'd never really enjoyed Ramos's art up until this book.
Exactly.
I'm like, I get it. It fits perfectly. Yeah,
it fits
for what
Spider-Man.
They're trying to do.
However, currently the guy they got doing Thunderbolts does not fit Thunderbolts.
Well, Thunderbolts, especially that team that they have, is kind of a dark team. You know?
Exactly. So you expect a darker artist to be working on it.
I didn't even like.
Not a guy that looks like
Dylan?
He draws
it's
Adventure
still,
Time.
It's still going there.
Dylan's well known. He actually did a very large chunk of Ennis's Marvel Knights Punisher run, and he's well known for that. And
Dylan did the first few,
As a big Punisher fan, I wasn't even a fan of it then, and I'm not trying to knock Dylan. It's his style isn't my cup of tea. That's
I'm
saying.
Fine.
But exactly, I don't.
But
think
his
it's
style,
a dark,
like, his style is if you mesh it with the right book, it's great. Like, if you took his style and threw him on Deadpool, or you took his style and threw him into something like...
There's certain ones. Like, there was actually a Punisher miniseries. It was Punisher versus Bullseye. And Dylan did the art, and it was written by Ennis. And it sort of had some tie-ins to some stories that went with the Marvel Knights stuff.
Yeah.
And that actually suited, because despite it being Punisher... there were some goofy things to that. Like, there was a mob guy that was actually hiding from Punisher, so he was posing as a woman. Like, he was wearing a dress and a wig and everything like
Bullseye
that.
Bullseye riding his motorcycle all the way and flipping off Punisher in the one scene is just beautiful.
Like, I mean, it was a silly book, so it tied in. But I totally understand what you're saying.
So, anyway, that's my harp on artists. I'm just saying that Disney owns them. No excuse.
I actually wanted to ask a question about that because I'm not reading a ton of Marvel right now.
Yeah.
Are they still doing... remember, I complained a few episodes back about the Draco, that 6-issue X-Men story, how they had an artist for the first 5 issues and then completely changed it to this cartoony-styled artist. Are they still pulling stuff like that?
The one thing I will say is even though the art... even stuff that's not up to par, at least it's consistently not up to par.
It consistently sucks.
Yeah, like I would say, because I have been pushing myself really hard to, because I love the Captain Marvel, the current Captain Marvel in Marvel. Mm-hmm. I think she's got a lot of potential. Some of the stories haven't
I've
been
always
so
been
great.
I've been a Carol Danvers fan since... probably around Secret Invasion, or not Secret Invasion, just after Civil War, I think I got into her stories.
And I've enjoyed on and off. There has been some just terrifying art.
Oh, I've seen
some of it.
And Guardians of the Galaxy has terrifying art in it right now.
I didn't mind the new, for the Francisco Vivia, I think his name is, but I didn't mind it. It was like you were saying, it was more noir than what I would normally expect from a cosmic book.
And that's I think it's not so much because I honestly don't think okay, I don't want people to think I'm harping on a specific artist.
Oh yeah,
or
no,
anything.
It's just a general
okay thing. Because in my opinion, there every artist has his own style and he's good at his style, but right. There's certain books mm-hmm. or certain topics that an artist is better suited to.
It's almost yeah. like what you okay. guys were saying is they should have just
like
switched
if
those
you,
two.
If you yeah. took that guy and you threw him on a Moon Knight book
or how about Thunderbolts
or on a Punisher or something like that, it would be badass, but yes. It did not work for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and I'm actually really excited. The next Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be drawn by Kevin Maguire.
Oh, fantastic.
It's going to be starting at number one. But
no, it's number 10, and he's just going to tell a funny one-off story. I guarantee it's going to have that lighthearted... nice.
Good, because after the Infinity stuff, you need a bit of comic relief.
You need to sort of take a step definitely. Out of it. So. What I'm also really fascinated by is the amount of stuff coming out. And Chris, you actually covered this before where you were saying like looking at stories as seasons.
Yes.
I think that, in my opinion, I think that's where a lot of series are going to go. I'm seeing like with Young Avengers right now, it's not a book that I read, but that's my understanding of it is that they've told the story they want to tell and they're going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Which I think is fine.
Well, they did that with like it. Avengers Arena. They've right. done that with a couple other things. So, you know, Why don't you take those books that you're doing that?
Yeah.
And instead of throwing it as an ongoing series, why don't you make these as maybe a mini series where it actually says 1 out of 18?
Yeah,
or
and it's
1 out of 25, and then and it could be because maybe they don't know where they're going to end it.
Yeah, and I think right. that's where I think that's sort of we're in this transition stage right now where I think that we're going to end up seeing, like with the new Fantastic Four series that's coming out, Matt Fraction, because he's going to be doing all the Inhumanity stuff, has wrapped up his Fantastic Four run, which I really enjoyed. And they're passing it on to like James Robinson, another DC expat showing up at the Marvel door. And I think it's going to be an interesting idea to have the whole thing start over again. And I like thinking about it as a new season of Fantastic mm-hmm. Four. It can be... You know, that allows also, it allows for
and
sort
I'm all,
of...
And I'm all for that. Oh, I think that's a great idea because especially if you can consistently get the same writer doing it.
Yeah.
If not the same artist as well. Now, I know Marvel likes playing Shuffle the Artist right now, but like if you can consistently get a writer and an artist, then if you give them a full season where you're giving them like 25 issues or 24 issues, like 2 years
to sell,
worth,
yeah, to,
right,
to do
then
their
it'll
story.
Give the writer and the artist, and I've talked to artists because I have friends that are in the industry.
Yeah.
And when I talk to my friends that are in the industry, nothing ticks them off more than when it's like, oh, I got 3 issues of Captain America, then I got to go to an issue of Moon Knight, then I got to go jump to some book for like Dark Horse.
Yeah.
Then I got to come back to DC and do something. Because they don't get a sense of ownership, and when they don't have the sense of ownership, they don't care.
And it
okay, so if you lock them in for a run like that, then they're going to do better. They're going to be more likely to produce better, and in the long run, the writer and the artist will be able to mesh each other out better, and then figure each other out.
And I think that's why I think
Dan Slott works so well with Ramos,
because
they've been working together for
and it's
a while.
Really. It's really interesting to see because I from talking now, I'm really thinking that we're at some sort of like transition moment with a lot of the stuff that Marvel's doing because mm-hmm. I think we're going to end up with ongoing series, but also with an eye towards keeping things short and clear, but also with an eye to like putting trades out with
and that's all right. Like I don't mind them switching up, and I like if they're going to switch up the entire creative team and kind of. You know, potentially take something in a different direction.
Right.
I have no problem with them starting over. It's the all new now things.
Yeah.
And this issue equals this issue. It's like, first of all, something's only gone 6 issues and you're not changing the creative team. Why are you really bothering?
Worrying about with the renumbering of it.
I think for a lot of them, especially with Avengers AI, which is really good. I've actually been enjoying it.
Oh, it's a fantastic book. It's a fun read.
I think that it's sort of on the cusp of not getting a lot of people, so they're trying anything. So a lot of it does come off as sort of a ham-handed marketing attempt.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, let's sell lots of copies of books. I would say that they are not doing it as boldly, shall we say, for lack of a better
really,
adjective, as
DC. It
took
a two-page spread in Marvel previews.
But I mean, like, if you want to talk about people selling their books without much thought as to why, I mean, like, the 3D covers are worse, I think, than a number one. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, excusing one or the other.
No, yeah. Okay. So now that we've had our bitch fest, I would like to talk about. Okay, there's a lot of fantastic first issues that
Heck are
coming out.
Oh,
In the next 3 months.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got Avengers World is starting.
Yep.
Okay.
Which, another Hickman Avengers book. So good
I know,
luck.
But
good luck,
you know
everybody.
What? I like Hickman books.
Oh,
if,
me too.
If they properly give him the roadmap, so
yep.
to speak.
Yep.
Miss Marvel, where they're actually introducing a new version of Miss Marvel, who
yes.
is an
a Muslim
Indian girl.
A teenage, yeah, teenage Muslim. I think her family's Pakistani.
Kamala yep. Khan is the character's name.
Yeah, yep. Kamala Khan. We've got Black Widow is starting back up at issue number one.
The covers, the cover for Black Widow number one is just gorgeous.
Oh, it is.
It's like an old spy thriller.
And I hope that's the direction they go with it
yeah.
because it's
well,
it's something
it
that's missing right now.
Yeah.
Right. I'm looking forward to New Warriors because you know what? I love the young team.
Yes.
And I want to see if they cause another Stanford incident.
You know what?
I just,
if yep. the cover is anything to be what the interior art's going to be, it's a very colorful, vibrant book. And honestly, with what I know of past New Warriors books, that really kind of sums up what they're about. Like, this is what kind of proof of what you were saying of, like, the artist reflecting properly.
I'll miss my Night Thrasher, though.
I was just going to say, I miss Night Thrasher and Rage.
And Rage.
Those really made the characters.
Touché.
Really, really young black man named Rage. Oh, boy.
They got She-Hulk starting, which we already
yes.
talked about.
Warren Ellis on Moon Knight, which is going to be awesome.
Oh, that is going to be glorious.
The art on that just looks
Punisher's got another book starting, which we haven't...
LA.
And we haven't had that since Rucker's run, which, by the way, was one of the most glorious runs of Punisher ever, and I wish it never ended.
I completely agree with you. So many people talk about Garth Ennis's run between the Max Punisher and Marvel Knights and everything.
Right.
For my money, that two-year or close to it run that Greg Rucka did with
was that Frank
Chiappetto?
Castle?
No, that
no,
was,
no,
that
hell
was
no.
Rick Remender.
Okay,
we don't talk
okay.
about
no,
Frank
no.
Castle.
This Rucka's Punisher run... I think it went 16 issues, and then he had a four-issue miniseries. It was cut short because Marvel wanted to put Punisher in Thunderbolts.
Oh, that
because apparently you can't have a solo book if you're on a team. Wolverine.
Deadpool.
Yeah, exactly. So that frustrated me because this is hands down my favorite Punisher story that I've read, and it was one story arc that went the whole way, but it didn't drag.
Yeah.
It didn't. The only time they ever had, there was a couple issues where they had to switch artists, but it never felt out of place. All
yeah.
the artists had
a
similar feel to it. Now, Chiachetto, if I'm pronouncing that name properly, he still did all the covers, and his interiors fit Punisher so perfectly. Like, they were crisp and clear, but at the same time, they still had that grit to them. Almost like Lanil Yu, but
yep.
not quite as sketchy.
As clean lines, yeah.
Like, it was a lot cleaner. But a similar sort of feel to that, if I can try to draw that comparison.
We also have,
so
I know, a personal favorite of yours starting back up, Jamie, X-Factor.
Yes. Peter, I'm really excited when they announced that Peter David's going to bring X-Factor back.
David's doing
Peter
it.
Peter David's writing it again.
Oh, okay, that's good.
And the cast that he has been given is, again, just a great selection of mutants nobody cares about anymore.
but you're going to be all. I know you're going to be
all
over
that.
That.
Cypher, and Warlock are back on a team. That
See,
is going to be so great.
As somebody who's a fan of B-level characters, like I love She-Hulk,
yep.
Punisher. I'm not saying he's a B-level character, but at the same time, A lot of people don't put him in the same level as a Spider-Man,
yeah,
or as a Captain
he
America.
In sort of a
he's a street level
sphere,
guy. I'd
yeah.
put him still probably close to at least the same as Daredevil.
Yeah, for sure.
But he's not up there, you know. And as a fan, I love when people kind of take a B-level character and can really run with it. Plus, I feel like they're given more freedom because Marvel doesn't necessarily care as much. It's like, yeah, it's only that character. Go ahead and do whatever.
Worried about, and that's the one thing that I really have been enjoying in a lot of Marvel stuff is that there is relative amounts of freedom for a lot of the writers. Maybe, you know, too much freedom for some of the artists, but like the writers themselves have freedom to do what they will with the character. Mark Waid was free to pretty much rewrite Hulk, to pretty much rewrite Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Slott just completely decimated the Spider-Man universe. But,
I
love it. I think mm-hmm. it's probably the best Spider story that there's been in
yeah.
years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, and with a legacy character like a Spider-Man, once in a while you need something to shake it up
yep.
like that. That's,
yep.
that's going to last more than a few issues or a year or something like that. Like, I hope this Doc Ock thing sticks around for a while. Like, we know, let's be honest, we all know eventually Peter Parker's going to be back in that costume, back in that. He'll be back in his meat suit eventually. But until then, and I'm not actually reading it, I've read the first trade and I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'll probably get some future ones, but it's something like, if you're going to shake up the status quo, don't just do it for the sake of shaking it up and then change it. Like, you know, when Winter Soldier died in Fear Itself, spoilers, and then, you know, a solo issue right after Fear Itself. Oh, he's not actually dead.
Yeah. But that's the fact that they're highlighting all these characters, and they're really, really good. Marvel's been good at, like, you're looking at the solicit for Loki, Agent of Asgard.
He got lobo'd. But at least he's magical.
Yeah. Well, but it actually happened in the comic books, though. They aged him up in Young Avengers.
I didn't know that, but you know what? He's Asgardian.
I think it's just them trying to make him look like more like Tom Hiddleston. But you know, hey,
and that's
probably totally fine. I kind of liked Kid Loki because I always envisioned a cross promotion team up between Kid Loki and Damian Wayne. That's an awesome team right there. As a fan of Loki, and not just the character, I like the mythical god point out, of Loki, personally.
Well done sneaking in your Batman.
Your requisite Batman reference.
Your requisite Batman reference into a Marvel episode. Brilliant show.
I will be speaking only in rim shots for this episode.
It's like you said, everybody loves Tom Hiddleston. It wasn't called Thor the Dark World. I realize that's what the title said, but I'm sure it was actually Loki. It should have been Loki's little brother, Thor, the Dark World. That's going to be a huge seller, and I agree with Chris. It's probably to tie it closer to the movie universe. We have Thor apparently starting 19 point now, a.k.a. number one. X-Men, and here's finally, I haven't really chimed in on the positives. Here's a book that I've actually been really digging from the get-go, and that is the X-Men title, the all-female team. So it's just X-Men, not to be confused with Legacy or Amazing X-Men or Uncanny X-Men. Or there's got to be others. Wolverine and the X-Men.
Wolverine and the X-Men.
And I kind of have a problem with the alternate titles like that, but I guess I can understand. If you're going to have that many X-Men books, you got to differentiate them somehow.
Right, yeah. Right. And Superior was taken, so Superior X-Men.
They weren't using Amazing anymore. So.
I think Extreme died out in the 90s.
But this all-female...
And all-new. All-new, they're going to use that as their tagline, right?
All-new X-Men.
Say what you want about, you know, the somewhat recent controversy with Brian Wood, who's writing the book. It's a fantastic book. The first three issues were really kind of a setup for anybody who might not have known everyone on the team, because they do have a couple, I don't want to necessarily say obscure characters, but not everybody knows who Rachel Gray is.
Right, yeah.
You know, and they kind of brought Jubilee back into things. Now, they could have explained a couple things, like technically Jubilee is still a vampire.
That's my
which
blue.
A lot of people, you know, might not know about. I actually didn't read the story where she became a vampire.
Curse of the Mutants.
If you did.
Because, you know, the X-Men titles can get a little convoluted, and that's why I stayed away from them for quite a few years. And aside from the odd trade paperback, like Messiah Complex and stuff like that, I haven't read a lot of X-Men until I heard about this all-female team, because a lot of my favorite X-Men are the women.
Yeah.
So that's why I was really excited about this book. And it was the first three issues were kind of set up. They had a one-shot for issue number four, and then issue number five and six were tying into Battle of the Atom. So that's why I was like, well, I might as well get this anyways. Yeah. And Battle of the Atom, I loved. As I said, I ditched Infinity in favor of Battle of the Atom. And now that Battle of the Atom's over and everything, we've got issue number seven came out, and it's the start of a six-issue story arc. And it's also the start of having one of my favorite artists, or I should say an artist team. It's Terry and Rachel Dodson.
Yeah.
They've done some work. They've worked with both companies. They've done some work with on Wonder Woman.
They're doing some X-Men. DC stuff. They're Power Girl was really
I love now they're stuff, yeah. They're kind of known for their cheesecake art, which for anyone who doesn't know the term, it's people who draw pretty ladies. and that's why Power Girl fits into that, but it's not just that. Like, you look at this and it's not all cheesecake art. It's just
well done
women
sequential
for,
art.
But
yeah.
It's they're just so well done. And I very much enjoy this book a lot. So to see it, especially after only a short 3-issue run for the first arc, I'm kind of glad I'm getting a long, like, 6-issue story arc, and they're actually kind of bringing back an old Wolverine villain of Lady Deathstrike in this story arc.
So if that's issue 7, and it's going to be a 6-issue arc, so this new Marvel number 1 X-Men
starting at 10
point now is he's in the middle, halfway through the arc.
Yep, pretty much. That's what it looks like.
I know. This is what I'm talking about, Jamie.
Here's the solicit for it. An all-new sisterhood. The X-Men have taken down supervillains, aliens, and their own future selves, but never all at the same time. Lady Deathstrike has put together an all-new sisterhood, her own Illuminati, to take down the X-Men and take over the world, recruiting the likes of Typhoid Mary and Enchantress. Her cabal go on a global hunt for the most powerful of them all, an enemy who holds the X-Men responsible for her almost destruction.
Almost destruction.
It's never been a when it comes to Marvel, it has never been their writing, because I still to this day will choose a Marvel comic over a DC comic, because I think when it all boils down to it, if you removed the Avengers from Marvel, it can still stand on its legs.
Yes,
if
for
you
sure.
removed the Trinity from DC, you'd be in trouble.
It wouldn't exist anymore.
Okay, and that's what I hallmark Marvel as, more of a well done comic company, is the fact that if you got rid of Thor, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, and your other big Avenger heroes, all the tertiary characters could still hold the universe together very well.
For sure,
I think what the problem with that is that DC. And this is, you can look at this with the movies and everything, and why, Marvel's cinematic universe flourished so well, and DC's has always kind of been start and stop and everything. And it's true with the comics. And this is the point that I was trying to make that you were just saying, is that DC found out what worked and focused too much on that. So it's all Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And I'm talking like for decades, like not just recently or anything. They have what works and they only focus on that. Like when the New 52 started, it was all about the Justice League. Like the Justice League was the first issue of the New 52 that came out. It came out the same week as the last issue of Flashpoint. It was the only two books that came out that week. And the focus was all the books that spun out of the members of the Justice League. The Green Lantern books, the Flash books, Wonder Woman, the Superman books, the Batman books, and the Cyborg. Cyborg didn't have any other books. But that's what I mean, whereas Marvel focuses on their universe. And that's why I've always said, in the comparison, DC has the more iconic characters, in that if you ask someone to name a female superhero, Wonder Woman is quite often the first one that's going to come to mind, especially for a casual fan who's not a comic book fan. Or Superman, he's the token quote-unquote superhero. But Marvel, I've always thought, has the better universe.
Yeah, I think that there's more to explore.
They're more of a real world, and not just because they don't have made-up cities like DC does with Metropolis and Gotham City, but there's... It's like Ontario. It's yours to discover.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
Where's that rim shot?
Hey. So, I think that ultimately, it's really hard for me because, when you look at the comics, when you look at Marvel, I always think about DC. When I look at DC, I always think about Marvel. And in the sense that, it's hard to compare, to think about one just independent in and of itself, because I think about all the things that Marvel's doing that I kind of wish DC was doing, and I think about the few few things DC is doing. Like, I still enjoy All Star Western for what it is, and there's an element of legacy. And actually, there's been a really good article by Chris Sims on Comics Alliance. I think it was last week, it was a while back. It was in early November, about the main problem with DC versus Marvel is that Marvel has, just like we were talking about, a sense of legacy that they're holding on to. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That DC is trying to, and has constantly been trying to refresh the legacy, and not so much embrace it, but just be like, oh, you know, screw that noise, let's do this instead, which can work and can have good results. But at the same time, personally, as someone who's invested a depressingly large amount of years into the comic book fandom, I'm happy to have that recognized. I'm happy to see, you know, a Moon Knight series coming in. I'm happy to see Iron Fist be referenced. I'm happy
to see all
that come in.
It's true, but in the way of the New 52 and everything, like, it was successful, so obviously they're not going to say they shouldn't have done it or anything
that. Yeah.
But in regards to certain things, like restarting, you know, certain books, could you see yourself picking up, like, Detective Comics number 1000? Because they were into 900. That's not that far away when you think about
it. That would have been hilarious.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't necessarily knock them for restarting it, and I give them credit for going all out, because I've listened to interviews with Dan DiDio, and he has said that one of the things that they were doing was they were going to restart the entire DC universe except for Action Comics and Detective Comics, because those were their legacy comic books. Yeah. And then someone, it might have been DiDio himself, said, no, if we're going for this, we got to go all out. We got to do everything. We can't restart some and not others. And that's why they did. And it's not like they're not still keeping track of numbers.
So we're straying from the Marvel side of your things here again, Jeff.
Sorry, that was just what I was mentioning. Was it
the I mentioned Batman once and it just all goes.
Yeah. So what I want to ask you, Jamie, is tell me some things you're enjoying about Marvel right now.
There's really tons. I would say that I'm really enjoying the Hickman stuff. I'm really enjoying his Avengers, the Infinity stuff. It is complicated, but what I really liked about it is there's so much to unpack. Like, I didn't even realize that he brought back Star Brand from the new universe as one of his main characters. I'm also really enjoying X-Men Legacy. It's a really, really great book. And I'm happy to talk. I will talk your ear off about how great Superior Spider-Man is, which for me, Superior Spider-Man is the best Spider-Man story that's ever been done.
Come on, Clone Saga.
I said best, not mind-numbingly terribly worst. So I would say that, and I'm also really, really enjoying the Rebirth of the Cosmic side of Marvel.
Well, you've always been a fan of the Cosmic stuff.
I've always enjoyed. For a while, the only place I could go to get really good interstellar storytelling was a lot of the DC books, the Legion of Superheroes and the like Rebels and Redux.
So let me pick your brain on one thing here, Jamie. Yep. Now, we're talking about how Marvel can be confusing sometimes.
Yes.
And one of these things that has been confusing in the past is, how does someone jumping into Marvel Comics differentiate the Ultimate Universe and the Marvel Universe?
Yes.
But now, one of the greatest cosmic beings from canon Marvel has been sucked into the Ultimate Universe and said, go eat it. Have fun.
He's gonna destroy it.
What, is Galactus?
Galactus is
canon. Galactus is in
Ultron.
He got sucked into the Ultimate Universe.
Melded
with the Galactus swarm that was in the Ultimate Universe, and the cataclysm event that is going now is going to be the end of the Ultimate Universe, and Galactus gets to eat it.
I was curious about that because I saw the cover of one of the Cataclysm books, and I'm like, but the Ultimate Galactus didn't have the pointy head thing.
No. They're finally, after all these years, Galactus finally gets to eat an Earth.
They're giving him one.
They're giving him an Earth, and it's not canon Earth, but you know what? It's going to be the end of the Ultimate Universe.
Now, is this actually going to be the end?
Yes,
it's
the end. They are ending the Ultimate Universe.
So in other words, they're kind of, again, sort of doing what DC did in that they're taking their alternate universe and they're going to bring
in some...
Which is why you're getting a whole bunch of titles starting with this over and getting things like New Warriors back and She-Hulk back.
So we're going to have a Miles Morales Spider-Man book and Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Well, I don't know what's
going to
happen
with that. Who's going to live? Who's going to die? Or is this going to be more of a Crisis on Infinite Earths thing, where there's only going to be, you know, say one Spider-Man, we got to figure out who's living and who's dying?
Well, see, and this is going to be one of those interesting things that Marvel can do is, are they going to rescue some characters? Are they going to use this as a way to regrow some characters? For example, with what's going on, you've had some characters die in the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is this the way they're going to bring them back? Because their alter egos are going to be coming back.
Well, you know, it'd be an interesting thing that I just thought of. They've recently started bringing Nightcrawler back in Amazing X-Men, which is a new title that started up, and it's not really a spoiler thing because he's right on the cover of the first issue. I think it would be interesting if that actually turned out to be the ultimate Nightcrawler, which I understand was also dead, but since the story deals with heaven and hell, it doesn't really matter which one it could be.
I think he's just going to teleport back from the dead.
Didn't he die in Ultimatum?
Yeah, he did. Ultimate
Nightcrawler did. The regular one.
He drowned when Magneto flooded the city. Yeah. Hey, look, one of the most horrific panels in comics was when the Blob was eating the Wasp.
Hey, so let's be happy we're no longer there with Marvel Comics, at least for all the stuff they're doing. They're not trying so much.
So they are trying to ease things, and they're trying to get rid of the extra universe that was the sales of it have been dropping.
Yeah.
I mean, Ultimate. And Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Spider-Man. And
ultimately, Ultimate wasn't Ultimate.
Yeah, well, technically anymore. It was.
Well, the brand new Ultimate now is not going to happen.
Point Ultimate.
Ultimate, exactly.
You posed the question to Jamie, but so what have you been liking specifically with Marvel?
I have been loving, again, Slott's Spear Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. It is really
I'm loving
good.
I want to see where they're going with it. I can't wait for it to happen. You're going to find that a lot of the things that Jamie liked, I really liked as well. I'm a huge fan of the Daredevil Wade run. This has just been absolutely... Mm-hmm. It's been poetry in motion.
The art and everything has just been perfect.
I have also thoroughly enjoyed the storytelling in Scarlet Spider.
Yes, it has been really good.
I really enjoy Scarlet Spider. X-Men Legacy. At first, I was iffy on the comic because it was all in his head. And it was getting a little confusing for me, the whole jumping between the personalities. But now that I've gotten through that opening story arc that was slightly confusing and I caught up, I absolutely love Legacy. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Uncanny Avengers was fun.
Yeah, you could have just said I love Marvel and ended it.
I love Marvel. There really is because almost every one of the Marvel titles, it's probably easier for me to list the ones I'm not enjoying than it is for the ones I am enjoying.
Yeah. Well, for me, one of the things that I loved recently that they did was they released a just 2-issue Punisher story called The Trial of the Punisher. And this ties in all the way back to that whole season thing.
Right.
It was a 2-issue story. They told the beginning and the end. I kind of would have liked it to be longer, and they could have gone into a little more detail
in
the story. But you know what? They told what they needed to tell. The art was done by Lin-El Yu.
Nice.
Oh, it was fantastic, dude. You should flip through that. It's a great book. It was just a 2-issue story, and since we haven't had Ruckus Punisher for about a year or so.
It was nice.
It was nice to get that back, and it's a nice thing to kind of wet your palate until that new Punisher comes out. And it was cool. It didn't have to be long. It didn't have to be a new series. It wasn't a tease like a one shot.
Yep.
It was a nice get in and get out, and it had a great story, had nice action, fantastic art. It didn't tell Punisher how he shouldn't, it wasn't like Punisher acting the way he shouldn't be acting.
Right. It was all in character, and it was all.
Mm-hmm. And again, just to bring it back, I mentioned it earlier, this all-female X-Men title. And I only say that because the title is just called X-Men, and since there's so many, I don't want to confuse people. That has brought back my love of X-Men comics. I was collecting back when Dixon was writing a few years back and stuff like that, and it was getting convoluted and just hard to follow, even just with the 2 books that I was getting.
Yep.
This and Battle of the Atom have really brought back my love of the mutants to the point where I kind of want to know what's going on with Cyclops' team of mutants. I kind of want to see what else is going on with Wolverine's team. I actually had picked up issue 1 of Amazing X-Men because I was curious about that and Nightcrawler's return and everything. So I feel like it's really been kind of a rebirth for the Children of the Atom. Like, not just this book that I'm collecting, but all of them. Like, Battle of the Atom, it's more streamlined, and each team kind of has its own focus and its own thing. But they're not getting too convoluted. And I really love that they've sort of turned, even though Magneto's still around, they've sort of turned Cyclops and Wolverine into the new generation's Xavier and Magneto.
Yeah, yeah.
So I also want to point out that Marvel is fully aware of their blunders. Okay,
yes.
Because they released a comic a couple weeks ago that was called Marvel Now What The.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The entire thing was Scotty Young and several of the other people at Marvel poking fun at the fact that they know the all new super fantastic over the top Marvel Now is happening. The Young Marvel variants that Scotty Young's doing.
Yeah.
The cool thing is these are books that they used to put out like back when they did the What Ifs a little more regularly than they do
now.
Yeah,
they did the What
Does. They had a couple of What Does as well. Like I have one as a Marvel What The, and it's Who Watches the Watcher, and he's sitting there doing the Marilyn Monroe pose with the air duct dress and everything like that.
And that's
so this ties in with that, but it just goes to show, like Chris was saying,
Marvel
knows
where the problems are, but they're choosing to ignore them and keep going anyway.
And truck along.
One more thing I want to point out with Marvel before we have a little wrap up to this episode I do like how Marvel is including more digital codes with their comics.
Yes.
Because from a comic store perspective, this means that I am more likely to sell an issue off the shelf to someone who likes digital because they're willing to come in and give me their money. I don't want to be quite that blatant about it.
Yeah.
But keep comic stores alive because they can come in and find more of the titles than where DC is just kind of doing their combo packs for their like top five sort of thing.
Yeah.
And those are
an extra buck.
They're an extra buck, and Marvel isn't doing that. Yeah. And more of their books are having the digital code, which means if you like digital comics and you like reading them on your computer or your tab app or whatever, like you can still buy the paper issue and support your local comic store.
But at the same time, get your code, which
but
is just
get your
awesome.
Code.
Exactly. And you know, maybe you got a deal with a buddy of yours. You're a digital fan and he's not. You can pick up the comic, get your digital code, be like, here you go, dude. Read it away.
So when it all boils down to it, Marvel is definitely making some good decisions, but at the same time, they're making some headaches as well.
Good idea.
Bad
idea.
For a company that's trying to attract new people, the way they're trying to attract new people is slightly confusing for the new people.
Yes, I understand.
But in the overall sense, they do have the better universe, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're doing a lot of really interesting things, and I think for all of us, they're doing things that are getting us really immersed in the universe, which is kind of impressive.
As someone who never actually got into the Ultimate Universe for the most part, I've read some Ultimate Spider-Man. I actually did collect Ultimatum, partially just because I wanted that whole long cover that tied together.
I'm kind of glad. Sadist.
I'm kind of glad that the Ultimate Universe is ending, though. I've always preferred the canon, the 616 universe, which actually had a little cameo in Thor: The Dark World. I'm sure we'll get to that in a future episode. But on Buddy's blackboard there of all the things, he had 616 universe.
Nice.
So a little Easter egg for us fans. But and I fully agree with that Marvel's always had the better universe, plain and simple. I mean, I'm still a fan of DC, but more ultimately, no pun intended, I'm a fan of good comics.
Yeah.
Marvel, DC, whoever. You know, Image, Dark Horse, take your pick.
Indeed.
I like cake. I've had nothing to say this entire episode.
Hey, that's all
I right. like Avengers Arena. That's all I know.
Nice.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's a fantastic book, at least from what I've been
Yeah, hearing. And they just finished up the last issue. Mike just picked it up me today, so you'll have to let me know what you think when you're done there, Mike.
Yeah, and you know...
Say Dark Hawk spoilers.
I guess I'm just going to throw in my final thoughts on this. The stuff that's happened with Marvel this year has completely turned me off of them. Like, Avengers Arena is the only... I think I'm reading that in Superior... Is Superior Carnage still gone? Or was it like a 3 or 4 issue thing?
I saw a thing in preview, so
yeah,
it is still going.
I think it's going.
It's still going.
So yeah, that'll be the only two books that I'm going to follow unless they do something amazing next year. And unless I hear it from you or you or you, I'm not... don't care, which kind of sucks because I love Marvel.
I'm really curious about this Ultimate Universe melding, though. I think it'd be interesting if we saw the Venoms join together into just one kind of giant lobby monster Venom.
I think we had a series of that. He actually made it with a thing. It was kind of terrible.
Well, I would love to see if I would like to see if something like Ultimate Hulk, you know, comes to
the
normal universe.
There is,
and then the Hulks actually show off. Anyway, Mike.
Anyway, so we'll be back. What's our next topic the next time we come back?
I think we're going to do a year in review, what the best and worst of 2013 is.
Yeah, sort of our geek scorecard. So get your bingo cards ready, guys. So until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd with...
I'm the amazing Chris Peddle.
I am the uncanny Jeff DeHaan.
And the new Jamie McBurney.
Oh, and follow us on Twitter at Gauntlet Podcast.
Woo!